It's time for The Citizen Lobbyist, a discussion of local, borough, and state politics featuring Terry Snyder and Mike Malefsky.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was just talking about vanilla. Do you have any vanilla flavoring in your house?
I do. I have some good vanilla flavoring from Mexico.
Right. And there's a little bit from Mexico, but most of it, I'm told 80% of it comes from Madagascar.
Oh, yeah. That's really good vanilla. Yep.
But there's some problems associated because it's become very expensive because of some problems associated with weather conditions and so on. So in any case, that was just a lead-in. And right now, I guess the point I'm making is that things that seem to be common, easily obtained, we use consistently, can take on a whole different character because we're sort of connected with the entire world. And what happens in Madagascar can reach right inside our kitchens and something that people have become used to and use, not maybe all the time, but kind of like, might become very difficult to obtain.
I have another example of that, Mike, while we're in the kitchen.
Okay.
Pine nuts.
Okay, talk
pine
about that.
Pine nuts used to be, you could get a pretty good sack of pine nuts for about $9 or $10 a bag, and now they're up to closing in on $30 a bag. I'm not sure where exactly they all come from, but it is, when you add it all up, I mean, overall, everything in the grocery cart has gotten more expensive, and a lot of it comes from other places, and even from some of it comes here, and it's from right here, but it's weather driven. So we've had some pretty bad weather that has, taken out some vineyards and taken out some prime growing areas. So it is all connected.
Okay. Well, let's go down the road and roll back to Tuesday and start our discussion today with the Palmer City Council meeting. I was there. We streamed it, recorded it. We even had a video up about it. It was a relatively short meeting for the most part, finishing in under an hour, and then there was an executive session. But what I wanted to touch upon in particular was that if you looked at the agenda, just the pure agenda, what you would see is a consent agenda with some items on it that were fairly standard and didn't require much discussion kinds of things. And then you had an innocuous listing of reports, the city manager, city clerks, and so on. And then you had one public hearing, amending Palmer Municipal Code, dealing with signs. And then,
did that pass, Mark?
Yes, it did.
Well, because there was a lot of discussion about signs.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And what I would have to tell you is that there weren't people in the audience. I have to understand this. There was no one in the audience besides people from the city. I was there. Another reporter was there. And there was someone who was going to be participating in the executive session that was there. But other than that, it was pretty empty. There was
It is fair day. It is fair week.
That's true. So I'm going to jump ahead, and then I'm going to go back. I'm going to jump ahead and say, since you brought up the reference to the signs, the discussion about signs, and that the sign thing, if you were to look at the lengthy description of the revisions of signs, the council did ask a few questions about why were all these details there, and the manager very nicely pointed out that they were not only dealing with the present circumstance and making sure that that was clear, but looking ahead toward what could likely happen. One of the interesting discussions that was included was the point that they really were saying you could not have a sign on the roof of a building. Now, if you've been in communities where that's the case, you get a building in a nice location, they put a large sign on the roof. Well, that goes along with what pretty much is the whole deal here in Alaska about not having signs, billboards in particular, along highways, et cetera. If you go to some other states, you can be entertained by billboards all along the way. So the city of Palmer has a fairly comprehensive signage ordinance now that's up to date. And there were a couple of anomalies, gray areas, but for the most part, they approved that ordinance, and that was taken care of. But I want to go back to the manager's report, because here's where I would suggest that if people are going to be paying attention to what's happening, whether it's the borough or the council or wherever, it's sometimes worth prepping by going through and looking at all of those documents that support a report, for example. And I'm going to zip down there. If you are looking at the report to the council that's provided by the city manager, he gives a update and analysis of everything from the total calls that the police department has been involved in. And it's worth looking at that to see if there's been any significant change month to month. And in addition to that, you have the fire department, and you can take a look and see what they've been doing, and whether it's the EMTs or the fire department itself, and see if there are any kind of trends that are happening or particular things that are going on. I think one of the most interesting beginning parts, though, has to look at what were permits that have been offered, because that helps you to understand what kind of economic activity there is in the city. And when you take a look at that, you can notice the number of permits, building permits that have gone year to year. And in the year-to-date comparison was started in 2009, and you can see that there's been a slight up and down, but we're pretty consistent. And also in the matter of signs, there are sign permits that are listed there, and that's been fairly consistent too. Bumps up and down a little bit. The important point is the valuation and the fees. So you can have a lot of permits, but low valued items, or it can go up, because this all is dollar amounts that are going to flow into the city treasury, not only initially with a permit, but later on. So I'm just directing people's attention to that, and including, for example, people have questions about the golf course. George Collum was into our studios last week and had a presentation about the state of the golf course at the present time, pretty much from a playing perspective. But the manager's report includes a reference comparing this July, for example, with last year, to give you some sense of what's happening at the golf course, how are they doing, what are the fees that have, for example, from the driving range or green fees and so on. And it's quite easy to see that this year's green fees were significantly higher than last year's. And that all suggests that the golf course has had a pretty good year.
Yeah, I don't remember when they set fees this year, if they raised them a little bit. I think maybe they did, but I'm not totally sure. But they definitely have had more rounds of golf, which is interesting because everybody seems like we had an awful lot of rain this year. But golfers are golfers, and they're not made of sugar. They don't go away in the rain. So this speaks well for the management, I would think, of the golf course. They're down a little bit in merchandise sales, but, they compete with a lot of different businesses on merchandise. So that's understandable. But everything else looks like they went up, Mike.
Yep. Now, one thing that does not appear, if you were to look at this agenda, unless you were there, you may not have noticed, was that there was a discussion about the purchase of land for use in a park. And that it was interesting in the sense that you could have missed that unless you were there. There was a fair amount of discussion about whether it should be done. The city of Palmer has a land acquisition fund, and they have money in that. So it's not bonding or going out to get additional funds to purchase land. And there's been a commitment on the part of the city to ensure that there are parks, particularly located in areas that are going to have further construction. And so there was discussion and an agreement to have the manager move forward to negotiate for the purchase of a piece of property for a park.
Did they indicate where it might be?
It's Spinelli subdivision, and I do not have the exact location here at this moment, but we'll have the city manager in tomorrow for an Inside the City report, and we'll talk more about that when we get him in here.
Yeah, we should talk to the manager about that. If that is the same piece of property I'm thinking about, when that subdivision went in, and that subdivision's off the Palmer-Wasilla Highway, sort of behind Crevasse Marine, I think.
Right.
That was part of the subdivision requirement, that they set aside property there to be designated as a park. And I think that the council has struggled over the years, again, if I'm right, about what the design of that park should be, and some concerns about off-street parking and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting. Of course, you know, parking is sort of, in my opinion, sort of overjudged. We should be encouraging people to ride their bikes and get to parks other ways. But and there's certainly a big subdivision, a family subdivision, to support it. But let's see if that's what the history is of that, Mike. It would be interesting to see if that's the same one that has been sort of bounced around the council for some years.
I believe so. And I would also say that as you point out, when you're talking about a park and you say park, many listeners probably have their own image of what a park looks like, but it becomes a decision that you make of the kind of park you're going to have. Is it going to be more of a playground park? Is it going to be a trailhead park? Is it going to... There are all kinds of different choices that we made that in part will determine, as you're suggesting, what kind of parking is this a park that you know will encourage people to ride a bike to or not, et cetera. So,
there's a lot of discussion outside, and I see funding occasionally too for this, for multi-generational parks. You don't have to pick one playground. You can design parks for older people too, and have the benefit of something for everybody. And Palmer doesn't really have that here. I know Anchorage is working on a really big multi-generational park in the Faulkner Road area by Providence that is going to be pretty fantastic for all generations. Now, it all depends a lot on how much property there is there. But, the city, in my opinion, needs to recognize they have people, we talked about, Mike, from 8 to 80, and they need public facilities that are welcoming to all age groups, and so they might want to look at something like that. That'd be a good question for the manager too, if he's considered that.
Right. So he'll be here, and we'll run down through those questions and more. I also wanted to point out that following the manager's report, the clerk had a report that was interesting because she included some references to the upcoming election, but there is also a listing here that she has entitled Your Vote Counts. Mm. And what's nice about it is it walks through both locally here in Palmer as well in Alaska, how many elections had very close votes. For example, she started out with pointing out that in 2015, 8 votes made the difference in electing Richard Best to the city council, 8 mm-hmm. votes. And in 2016, 17 votes made the difference in electing Steve Carrington. David Fuller got 22 more votes in electing both of them to city council, very close.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrina Combs in 2017, most recently, 4 votes made the difference in electing her to the city council.
Mm-hmm.
And then, these are the ones that really grabbed my attention. In Alaska, people remember Jay Hammond. He won the nomination for governor over Walter Hickel in the primary election that he was in by just 98 votes statewide.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get down to the 1 or 2 vote game. 1978, Tim Kelly was elected to a Senate seat by one vote.
Yeah, and then we also on that list, Mike, are several ties.
Oh, yes.
That were broken by flips of a coin.
Yeah,
pretty unusual, too.
Exactly. A couple of school board seats in a couple of districts, won by a tie. And then possibly one of the interesting ones involved a longtime Representative Carl Moses. In 2006, a tie was broken by a flip of the coin to determine the winner of the House District 37 Democratic primary. And that was the tie vote with all the hundreds of votes that were cast. So
that brought challenger Bryce Edmond in, who just ended up being Speaker of the House the last session. So
exactly.
Yeah, lots of interesting things there.
Yeah, yeah.
While we're on that talk about elections, Mike, at some point, a little premature because it won't be until the October ballot, but we should talk about the ballot initiative that is on the October ballot regarding moving the election. And it might even be fun to get a pro and con group to talk about it, and because there certainly is two sides of the coin. I know.
Well, as luck would have it, the Meadow Lakes Community Council is sponsoring a forum, and they actually have Mr. Freed speaking there as well, economist. But they're going to be addressing this issue of the ballot, and we're going to be there. That's September 12th. So. We're going to try to both broadcast stream that event and then spin off from it. But you're right. As we get closer to the October election, this question of moving the date, the election to coincide with the general election is worthy of considerable attention.
Well, yeah, and there is some, you know, there's talk about increased costs. Everybody wants to keep the cost of government down, and so that's great. That'll be a great service to people, and we'll have to make sure people tune into that because it's a big question.
Yes, definitely that. And we've also just begun our process of reviewing the candidates that are in contested races. For example, Mayor Bernhalter has an opponent in the race for mayor of the borough, Bruce Walden, and we have Barbara Doty, who has an opponent in her race to retain her assembly seat. And over on the school board, we have two seats, Debbie Rutherford and Sarah Welton, both have opponents in their contest. Now, these are in this area contested seats, and we will be also sending out an invitation for all of those people to be interviewed so that we can get a sense of who, what candidates are saying and what do they plan to do should they be elected.
Yep.
Okay, so I think that pretty much takes care of the Palmer City Council. We'll have, say, more information about some of the details of things tomorrow. I thought we could look ahead a little bit. Well, first of all, let's look at the present state of affairs. We had statewide, particularly in Anchorage, we had some races in the primary election in August 21st that really looked like incumbents might be in trouble. Mr. Matichi from Kenai was behind, as was one incumbent representative in Anchorage. But it looks like both of them have turned around and will be running in the general election. And still some final counting to be done. But
absentee ballots, I think there's another week before we can actually call it. But it certainly has had its ups and downs, for sure. Especially not so much in the Kenai for Senator Matichi, although it's still going to be pretty close for comfort for him, and I don't think too many people saw that coming, but certainly for District 15, with the Weaver-Ladeau race, has been not without a lot of controversy.
Right. So let us look at next week's coming after the Labor Day weekend and the fair is finished up. where are we going with the assembly and the school board and the city of Palmer in terms of further meetings? Do you see anything in particular that's going to emerge as significant parts of the agenda?
Well, it's definitely back to business with the all the bodies a little bit. There'll be some election breaks and there's a lot of campaigning going on, but they don't have the assembly packet posted yet. It'll be posted Thursday probably for the assembly meeting. And I think there's a joint assembly meeting coming up, I want to say maybe September 11th with the school board. You know, they've now the joint committee with the assembly and the council or the assembly and the school board meetings that used to happen monthly, that there's a assembly couple assembly members sitting on and board members, they've now gone to doing those quarterly. So in between, they're more regularly having joint meetings with the assembly. So that one should be interesting. There's some requests from the school board to purchase the buildings that they're paying rent right now in for charter schools that the assembly, I think, has to sign off on. So there'll be some interesting things coming up there. And then, of course, you know, the city of Palmer is going to be digging into their budget, Mike, right? Because they have
a budget
by December. So, you know, after the Labor Day, that's kind of course, it's hunting season, and there's always something after something. But I think things get kind of more regularly as far as meetings go. And I think in between, we'll be busy doing forums and that sort of thing.
And, of course, we're awaiting the results after the good weather comes, which is predicted to be happening over the next few days in the end of the fair. See what the numbers say. And the two numbers that are always interesting to look at are how many people have attended the fair, and secondly, what kind of money was spent, which is reflected in the taxes that are raised by the city of Palmer. It's a very large infusion into their budget, and we'll see how that plays out this year, given both the weather and the general state of the economy.
Right. There was an article in the Frontiersman interviewing the manager of the fair and talking about sort of the ups and downs that the fair has had. Of course, attendance was down last year, some of that sort of for pointing to bad weather, but they feel like they've upped their concert game this year. Weather hasn't been very cooperative. I know there's been a lot of light days that I've been there, Mike, but with the spring of good weather coming up, hopefully that they'll get caught up a little bit because there's still lots of great new things at the fair to do. And people do wait till the last minute. A lot of people have a four-day weekend this weekend. The school district has an in-service day or a fair day on Friday. And then everybody, of course, pretty much across the board has Monday off. So if the weather cooperates, it could be a really good and busy time at the fair, and we want that for everybody.
Okay. Well, Citizen Lobbyist, I appreciate your call in today, and we'll be looking forward to next week, having finished up with the fair and moved on into what appears to be fall.
And we'll get to talk a little bit about what's on those agendas coming up, Mike. We'll have a better idea by then.
Right. Okay. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Citizen Lobbyist, broadcast on Thursdays at 8 a.m. and repeated at 5 p.m. on Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. You can find the podcast at radiofreepalmer.org. The views and opinions of moderators and guests did not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.